And we're back. So again, this is Cambridge Inside Out, and today, if I didn't mention it in the last half hour, is Tuesday, January 16th. 16th? Yeah, that's right. 2024. And I wanted to talk a little bit about basically the business of the city. Which hopefully we'll be able to proceed when the city council massages its rules a little bit to allow actual public meetings to take place. So what I wanted to basically, and I'm going to probably sound a little bit like the candidate that I was in saying some of this, because one of the things you learn when you're a candidate, if you didn't already learn know them, is you're sort of forced to think about things a little bit more deeply, so you're not just sort of narrating things and whatnot. You're actually in a position where you actually have to, if somebody asks you a hard questions, you actually have to be able to answer them. Though I have to say there are more than a few city council candidates who, if you ask them almost any question, they would give you a thoroughly inadequate response. But such is life. So one of the things that I want to mention, this is sort of in the arena of like a prognosis for the new term, but also a bit of a look back of the previous term, is that, as I was sort of thinking hard about this, I thought, so what's the problem? When people were complaining, like, oh, we're not being heard, I heard that a lot, or the city council did nothing. And then another person says, no, the city council did a lot. And actually, both statements are kind of correct. So how do you make sense out of all of this? So here's just a few quick things that I'll mention. One of the observations, and again, I'm more than happy to go on a street corner and argue this out with somebody, is that it seems that the biggest problem we've had in the last council term, probably the last couple council terms, is that almost every action, not every action, but many, many actions are driven largely by what you might characterize as single issue advocacy and politics, rather than actually taking a step back and trying to understand how modifications to the way we do things affects the whole system, right? And I'll just give you a few examples of this. So the And again, not to bring up big nasty controversies, but one of the big issues people talked about and ran on or defended positions they defended had to do with the cycling safety ordinance. I always confuse, is it bicycle safety ordinance or cycling safety ordinance? So we'll just say cycling safety ordinance, which mandated bicycle lanes to be established, even largely the quick build variety, with the white posts and moving car parking lanes out in order to move bikes to the right of the parked cars, et cetera, et cetera. And then what we've really kind of went through over really a lot over the last couple of years is a lot of reaction. So in other words, the city council basically, as a result of advocacy, simply mandates that something be done without ever having considered what the costs and benefits are going to be. It's like religion. You sort of, you got to do this, and that's that. No room for negotiation. And then we went through an enormous amount of pushback from people in North Cambridge. I think some city council candidates emerged, largely driven by this single issue. And then there were other candidates emerged, largely, taking the other side of the issue. But I think there's been, there was a lot of sort of trying to work something out, in terms of businesses that were, in the, already reeling from COVID, and now we're actually having a hard time getting their customers to be able to park there. There have been, pros and cons about relative safety, and it just occurs to me that all of those arguments should have been thought through before they screwed the first white post into the pavement. And I think there's a perfect illustration, at least in my opinion, it's a good illustration of why we do things wrong in this city. We basically say the advocates want this, And then they've got some friends within community development department or elsewhere who say, yeah, let's do this here. When in fact, what city staff really ought to be doing is taking a step back and doing a full-blown evaluation in anticipation rather than playing catch up after the fact. Now, I hope that in the 2024-25 city council term, they do a little bit more, evaluation about the pros and cons of that particular issue, and maybe make some adjustments. Even though there's going to be some advocates who say, whatever you do it. Don't touch it, because our religion dictates that thou shalt not touch a white post or move a vehicle back to the curb. But I think it really is called for, and I hope that we have a city council with enough courage and sense to actually take that on and actually. And maybe try and push our city staff to be a little bit more objective and fair and balanced. Fair and balanced, that sounds pretty nasty, doesn't it? In order to actually consider the entire system. And that includes the economic impacts. I mean, if you think about it, there were city council orders that were issued basically asking for economic analysis as a result of the bike lanes. Don't you think some of that should have been done beforehand? It just seems dead wrong. I think another one, potentially controversial, I suppose, is on that having to do with the issue of affordable housing, right? So in my opinion, much of the issue of affordable housing is not really driven by considerations about what delivers the best outcomes. It's more like we got to build more affordable housing, period. The notion about, well, maybe there are better ways of doing this or worse ways of doing this, or maybe there should be at least some analysis of when you're dropping $600,000 to $1 million per unit of taxpayer money to build these things here. Is that really getting the best bang for your buck, right? Does it really solve the problem, or does it basically just deliver like a lottery winner, a good housing deal for a relatively small number of people, so that everybody in the political sphere can say, look at us, we delivered affordability. When in fact, you didn't deliver affordability at all. In fact, throughout all the regular rents around the city, they're rising unabated. So, anyway, in my opinion, there should have been a lot more full consideration of the entire system of how housing, transportation, not just within Cambridge, but in the entire region, how it all works together as a whole system. And I don't think we do that much at all. I will say, having sat on that Envision Cambridge process, during that process, the people from the consultants from UTIL, who were shepherding the process, at least in the early days, I think they got it. I think they understood. And I think they did think in terms of trade-offs, and they thought more regionally. But at some point, it basically became the province of the community development department and the advocates who work within the community development department, which is a little bit of a problem, I'll admit, for me. I don't think our staff should be engaging in that level of political activity while working on my dime, but they do. And anyway, have done and taken a different look at how all of this is to be approached, but it's more like no. Actually, if you think about it, even Envision Cambridge, which was talked about allowing greater heights and densities along corridors, that pretty much was thrown away when one political advocacy group came in and said, we want our endorsed candidates to support building super tall along corridors. Those are ideas that were never appeared. They never appeared in the Envision Cambridge process at all. So in other words, we spend some time trying to do a so-so job at doing some sort of major planning effort, but in the end, the single issue advocates and the politicians basically are perfectly willing to just throw that in the fire, and just basically push something so that they can go, look at me, I built a few units of affordable housing. So I think that's a bit of a problem. I'll give you another example of a little looking back, looking forward. The city council, they can, I think, correctly argue that they accomplished a lot in terms of some of the energy related matters under the guise of BUDO, or later called BUDERO, about building energy use disclosure ordinance and retrofits and whatever. But the advocacy was out there to sort of push, push, push. Mothers Out Front was out front, push, push, push. But in the end, there were questions raised, legitimate questions about what was actually achievable in terms of the electric grid, and what can work in a Northeast environment where wind power has some limitations, where we're not out in the Pacific Northwest. We do not have the Columbia River Gorge powering our plants. Some people are still hesitant to embrace nuclear power, and and for good reasons, I suppose. Yet we wanted to go charge full steam ahead in mandating the obliteration of all fossil fuels, except in sort of some emergency backups. And even that, some of the backup systems, and even those were being challenged up to the end. And again, I'm only mentioning this here because doesn't it seem as though that all that analysis about what was feasible in terms of how much of the burden you can shift from fossil fuels onto electric, or for that matter, where is the electricity coming from? Because if it's generating from a power plant up the street, which is using fossil fuels, then explain to me how we did anything other than break even. But I think we had people within our community development department, I'm not just trying to beat up one department here, but who are advocates first and analysts second. And I think that's a problem. And I would hope that the 2024-25 City Council can try and correct that, and not just the council, because this is staff decision. So let's put it on the city manager too, and the deputy city manager, to basically take a good hard look at what the actual function of some of our city departments is. Are they just out there to wave the flag and win some political points of advocacy, or are they there to sort of take a straight on look at what's actually feasible and wise, and do the appropriate kind of cost benefit analysis and feasibility? What's the impact going to be on residents in terms of their costs to do retrofits? What's the impact going to be from various housing programs in terms of municipal finance? And I might add that we are probably heading toward a position right now where our city council is not just going to be milking that golden cow anymore, and we're going to actually have to make some real decisions about prioritization, what is actually affordable, how much of an additional tax burden do you want to shift onto the residential tax base without breaking them, and that goes especially for people who are house rich and cash poor. Right. I would love to see our new city council actually spend a little time thinking about this stuff and making sure that they don't take actions until they really have thought through, all of these matters before they do so. Now, one other thing that certainly was going to come up like right away, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier or in the last half hour, is possibly, I mean, from my point of view, but again, I'm a bit biased on this, is that one of the biggest issues that they're going to have to grapple with in the coming months will have to do with the charter question, right? And I probably talked about this a couple of weeks ago as well, but just to amplify this a little bit. So the City Council will get a package of recommendations and some narratives with or without recommendations about, how to modify their Cambridge's current Plan E charter, or obliterate the, I mean, effectively, it will not be called a Plan E charter when all is said and done. It'll just be called the Cambridge Charter. But what kinds of changes are appropriate? I mean, I'm personally have not been thrilled with the committee's work, even though I like the chair, but I'm sorry. There were some people on that committee who were there driving a political agenda, and who probably should not have been on that committee. But they were chosen by political people for political reasons, so they were on that committee. But just so if people don't actually know what the ways, what are some of the areas that are under, I guess under in the range of, I guess everything's on the table because the city council could discard the recommendations and just roll their own if they wanted to. Nothing prevents them from doing so. But first and foremost was just the simple fact of reformatting the entire document. You know, that may not be a matter of controversy, but you know, fixing your pronouns and doing all that stuff and having a document that does not refer to too many other documents that are not part of the charter itself is a good thing, and I know they're going to do that no matter what. But there were proposals to drop the voting age for municipal elections down from 18 to 16 or younger. Some people actually advocated younger. There were proposals that may be in the final recommendations from the committee to allow non-citizens to vote. Let's see, would that include Somerville residents? I don't know. I guess if you're living in Cambridge, right? But I, you know, and again, I've gone back and forth in my opinion on that particular issue, but people had better start being aware that that's one of the things on the table. One item that is not going to be a matter of a recommendation so much, but basically choice, is whether to maintain a city council city manager form of government. Or a strong, well, I'll be corrected by Kathy Bourne for saying this, but a strong mayor form of government. So you have a weaker council, strong mayor, but she would say, no, it's actually a mayor and a, let's say, like a chief operating officer. But it's effectively the big difference is that the elected mayor, directly elected mayor, popularly elected mayor, would become the chief executive and would be in charge of making hiring. Department heads, city staff, and whatever. And there are many of us who have very, very negative feelings about moving away from a city manager form of government toward a process where a political person would basically be making all of those decisions. At least under our current charter, five votes to elect a manager or to fire a city manager, which they can do on any Monday night if they choose to. The manager serves at may the manager may have a contract, but the manager has always served at the pleasure of the city council and can be fired in 5 minutes without any process whatsoever if the council so chooses. They may have to pay some money out on the contract to do so and find themselves another manager. But remember, managers do serve at the pleasure. So who's really the boss? City council is still the boss. And you're a strong mayor. Or a manager, or a council mayor form, the mayor becomes the boss. The council might as well basically just sit there, twiddle their thumbs for 2 years, in my opinion. There was also a proposal for moving municipal elections from odd years to even years. I don't personally remember whether that survived the process as a recommended option, but I think people should think about that. Do you really want to have, when people are showing up in a presidential election year, focusing entirely on national matters, that they should be then, ranking their city council candidates having to do with purely municipal matters? Nobody else in Massachusetts does it that way. I mean, you know, we have even years for federal and state elections. We have odd years for local elections, and that's a pretty good system. I hope they keep it. There is one interesting proposal having to do with creating what they're calling citizen assemblies. The Charter Review Committee, in my opinion, has been given some very half-baked views of how that would be done, including, you know, having these be appointed by the mayor or someone else, where they would have to basically pick people based on ethnicity and various other factors. And I'm thinking to myself, this is just sort of a bad road to head down. But, you know, these are some of the deficiencies of the Charter Review Committee. One change, at least in my opinion, an important change would be just to allow the Election Commission a little bit of flexibility to how they do surplus transfers and things, not to get too nerdy, you know, in our municipal elections, you know, and I think that would be a useful power to grant to our election commission, And this is a perfect opportunity to make that so. So I mean, anyway, I hope that will happen. So again, I mean, I gave, I went through a little bit of last, I guess 2 weeks ago of sort of, you know, sort of highlights of what actually happened over the last city council terms. I don't think I want to necessarily go through all of that again. I maybe some that I actually misspoke, and I mentioned that one of the biggest things we did over the last term was to choose a new city manager, city clerk, and city auditor. And I think they mistakenly said that Diane LeBlanc, now as our city clerk, followed Donna Lopez, but that's not true. Anthony Wilson was the city clerk prior. And so sorry, Anthony, I just spaced out there. But you know, there were quite a few other things that he didn't talk about last time. One little one that I'll just mention, it was because it was a kind of a buggy thing for me, was it's bothered me for 20 years that we the city managers had never appointed a traffic board, even though the state law that created our traffic commissioner, that was very explicit that they had to have a traffic board so that if residents had some issues about reconfiguring roads, including bike lanes, I think that they should be able to get 50 registered voters to sign and have the traffic board basically could overrule the traffic director. And we just never impaneled this traffic board. And people treat it like it was a nothing. You know, our current city manager, to his credit, finally said, he's right, you're right, we should have been doing it all along. And 1 year ago, he appointed a traffic board of three persons. Unfortunately, at least from information I've been told, it's never met. So why did we do that? We appoint a traffic board just so we can say that we've met the letter of the state law and then don't actually use it? I just don't understand this. I mean, we should not be operating in a manner such as that. Anyway, one last thing I'm going to mention here, and it was purely into the political realm. So something that I was, you know, because I, you know, I, as everybody knows, I like to look at ballot data and I look at, you know, voter databases and do all sorts of sort of, you know, fooling around and trying to make some sense out of those things. But one thing that I wanted to highlight, I'm going to kind of shift to the screen here to take a look at this, is I was getting to thinking a little bit about the role of these various candidate slates that have been emerging over the last several municipal election cycles. This year, with, you know, these are like both official and unofficial slates. It was the Cambridge Citizens Coalition, the Cambridge Voters for Good Government, A Better Cambridge, Our Revolution Cambridge, you know, the basic our local socialists, the Cambridge Residents Alliance. There was even endorsements from the Boston Democratic Socialists of America, the world's worst organization. Even outgoing city councilor Quentin Zondervan actually made endorsements of four challengers who he wanted to be his replacement. So I guess you could call that a bit of a slate. So I got to thinking about this. And so what I did was I started asking myself the question, how effective are these slates, or how effective were these slates? And I'm going to say that, you know, so what I did was I just said, all right, let's look at all the ballot data and we'll count somebody as sort of a loyalist for any one of these slates if their top five choices were all within that slate. Now, it's very hard to make a comparison here because some slates, you know, had 11 people on the slate. Some people had as few as four or five, right? So, and some had incumbents, many incumbents, some had no incumbents. And the presence of incumbents can actually affect whether people are going to vote for them for or not. For that slate or not. So one of the things I found interesting when I looked at it, I said, how many people voted, gave their first five top picks to people who are on the Cambridge Citizens Coalition? The answer was 2,439 people, which actually was a little bit better than the A Better Cambridge, where They had 2,431, so they were almost dead even, really. The Cambridge Bike Safety Group, on the other hand, they, you, I don't know if you call them endorsees. I guess you could call them endorsees. They had 11 people on their card that they shipped around, and they actually had there were 2,812 voters who listed their top five choices were bike safety endorsees. So maybe the bike safety people actually win that contest in terms of top five. But when you go look at the top four, which is maybe a little bit more appropriate, you see the Cambridge Citizens Coalition actually doesn't do as well. Drops down, it's got about 3,100. ABC's got over four, a little over 4,000, and the bike safety people have a little bit less than that. So, and in fact, if you just say how many voters put CCC people in their top three, and the same with all these other groups here, you see that CCC didn't have nearly as effective a grouping for the top three as did ABC, which did a, you know, were comparable to the bike safety people. I did find it interesting that if you just look at how many people ranked all incumbents in their top six, it was actually only 711. Probably the worst performance, well, there are multiple sort of worst performances here. One was Cambridge Voters for Good Government, but I think the reason for that numbers being low is that they didn't have much, they only had one incumbent on there. And so people were voting for incumbents, so they were not necessarily going to get listed in the top three, four, or five. I think if they had put Paul Toner something in there, it might have been, a, or Patty Nolan, I think might have been the one that was missing. Actually, I have them all listed up here. Yeah, if they put Patty Nolan in there, probably would have been a different story. You know, but there were some who were very effective, some who were relatively ineffective. So anyway, I'm not going to dwell on that a whole lot more, but just say that in my opinion, the results are thoroughly inconclusive because, you know, how many of those slates had four incumbents? How many of them had only two? How many just had one? It's really, you know, in my opinion, the biggest factor in the municipal election was incumbency. You know, all six incumbents won and won handily. Many of the new voters who had been loyal to outgoing councillors simply transferred their votes to other incumbents. And then, you know, some of the advocacy groups, you know, were probably responsible for getting a Jeevan Sabrina Wheeler back onto the council or Joan Pickett onto the city council, for example. You know, and you know, and you know, again, there are other factors relating to Aisha Wilson, who had a very, very strong vote total on the school committee. So anyway, I often look at data to think I'm going to be able to make a conclusion. I couldn't make a damn conclusion if I tried on this one, but I did find it at least somewhat interesting. You know, there are some other matters that, you know, I suppose I could mention here. You know, the if I'm going to make a little short wish list in my last 30 seconds here, I kind of hope that our city council actually spends at least a little time trying to be creative in making our squares more interesting and better. And better venues. Life is not all Starlight Square, my friends. If you want to recreate that, that's great. If not, do something better. But you know, you need to make the city a lot more fun. So, good luck, everybody. And on that note, I'm going to bow out here and say thank you for viewing another edition of Cambridge Inside Out.